Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello and welcome to Gravel Notes with David Evans, that's me. I'm coming to you live from the middle of the Haut Alps on the road up to Gap. I am not driving myself, I have a very special guest in the studio which doubles as a Fiat Tipo of some description. But my guest today, you wouldn't have heard him yet on Gravel Notes, it is Mr. Anthony Peacock. Hello Anthony.
Hello David.
So let me just put this into context for you. Anthony and I started our careers in journalism right about the same time. Anthony worked at Autosport while I worked at Motor and News. We covered the WRC together for a lot of years, didn't we?
We certainly did and had lots of fun along the way, especially here.
Yeah, especially actually. Here. Yeah, well, exactly. You went to Pirelli and obviously run your own agency now, but you're primarily now you do PR and a lot of work for Pirelli in Formula One. But one of the reasons that you're here, I'm sure you love going to Monte Carlo anyway, but it's also to talk about 2021, isn't it? Pirelli back in WRC?
Yeah, absolutely. So the last time that Pirelli was in WRC was from 2008 to 2010, the sole supplier. Pirelli back now as of next year, but I guess Pirelli as a tyre supplier hasn't really gone away because the company's been supplying WRC 2 cars as well as the Junior World Championship. So yeah, but definitely a sort of the start of another chapter.
Absolutely. Right, that's enough about Pirelli. We've got the plug in there good and early. Let's now just talk Fever. Let's talk about, when was your first Monty?
Oh God, my first Monty, that's a really, really good question. I think it was 2000.
Yeah, I think that was mine as well, because Jim Holder, the legend that is now Jim Holder, he was
there's a story there, actually.
Crikey,
isn't there?
I've forgotten about that. Right, that's actually quite interesting. Should we?
Well, yes. We can allude. Yeah, enough time has passed.
In fact, let's start with that. So Jim Holder, our great friend, who now is god of everything at Autocar, and just one of the nicest blokes you'll ever meet. I think it must have been about 2000 or 2001. I don't remember the year. But we were staying in Chateau Arnoux, and we had finished quite late, gone out for something to eat, and Noddy, Jim Holder is known throughout the world as Noddy, so let's just call him Noddy, he was driving, he'd got some work to finish. So you and I, it's fair to say, we'd had a bottle or two, hadn't we?
Well, I think that's why Jim was driving, because he hadn't had a bottle or two, no. So it was felt that the sensible thing to do was to get Noddy to drive. I mean,
worryingly, he hadn't even had a glass, had he?
No. He was on some form of pill, which meant he couldn't drink at all. So what happened next happened
not
when he was...
I just have to say, actually, when I say worryingly, not that we advocate drinking and driving.
Not that we advocate that.
What follows is worrying that he hadn't been drinking.
Exactly. So what happened next happened in a state for him of complete sobriety, and really, luckily for us, not in a state of complete sobriety. Otherwise, it would have been even more traumatic than it was. Or maybe I'm exaggerating.
No, absolutely not. No, it was a huge moment, quite possibly the biggest moment of my career. So we'd finished, left the restaurant, and we'd come. We were going back up the road that we'd come down, and you were in the front. We were in a Peugeot 208.
No. It was a 106. It was much less substantial than that. I don't think the 208 had even been launched back in 2000. I think we were back in the years of the 206 back then.
But it wasn't a particularly roughy one, was it?
No, it had an engine borrowed from a lawnmower, which was lucky.
So away we go. And because it's now very dark and very late, it's completely frozen with lots of black ice, lots of verglas everywhere. And we went into quite a long... right hand or left hand, I can't remember. Well, it was a long corner.
It went on forever.
Yeah, and I will just get this bit and then it's all over to you. I had said to Noddy, I tried to call some of the corners from sitting between the front seats in a reasonably inebriated state, telling them they were all flat, and then we arrived at the entrance to this very long corner and I said, Nodster, I don't remember this one. I don't think this one's flat. And what happened?
Well, it turned out that it wasn't flat. You were right.
It
wasn't even nearly flat. You see, myself and Noddy share a common hero, who is Francois Delacour. And I think Noddy was trying to channel his inner Francois Delacour. But, you know, even Francois Delacour goes off the road occasionally, and that's exactly what happened. And so we went skating off the road in, you know, probably at low speed, because, you know, this Peugeot was powered by a lawnmower engine, but it felt very, very fast at the time, particularly with that massive telegraph pole getting closer and closer and closer, which luckily we missed, but it would have been a little bit painful if we hadn't. So we eventually stopped. I seem to recall I had what could be called as a bit of a sense of humour failure at the time.
You lost your shit over that.
I think, yeah, can we say lost the shit on the podcast? I did lose my shit. And anyway, it's fine. I hope you're listening, Noddy, and I hope you remember. It was one of the standout memories for me of the Monte Carlo Rally. And that wasn't even a rally car in sight at the time.
My lasting memory of that moment was looking out of the rear screen at the telegraph pole as we were approaching it, and you just kind of know, regardless of how much red you've drunk, that's not right. That's not the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, like, you shouldn't really be looking at things coming towards you from a rear screen, for a start,
should you?
You
know, no, not unless you're reversing at very slow speed.
No.
But anyway, so there we are. But Nods, it was a fabulous ride.
Thank you, Noddy, for that memory.
To get over that, though, didn't it?
I've never had any really, really scary moments in a car apart from that one. So that was actually sort of like the worst one ever. And, you know, having said that, we're now going to have an enormous accident this evening, aren't we? But I don't think it'll happen.
Let's hope not. But so that's a bit of a memory for both of us. But I think, so as we reckon, we both started around 2000. And for me, you know, the great rivalries and the great battles early in those 2000s had to be Colin and Richard. But my memory of those two on the Monte was the fact that they both absolutely hated this event, didn't they?
Yeah, it was really odd. For whatever reason, they didn't quite get on with that. Sorry, I'm just exerting myself because as part of the live atmosphere, we're just paying a toll here. Colin and Richard, yeah, they were never really, for whatever reason, they never really felt at home with it. Who knows why? I guess you could say there's nowhere like the Monte in Britain, but I think there's nowhere like the Monte anywhere in the world. So it's a bit of an odd one. Some drivers just don't, I guess. I mean, like Marcus Gronholm always hated Monte. Yeah. So did Petter, actually.
Tommy, you know, another Finn, absolutely loved it and totally got it. It is that, you know, it's a unique event in terms of, it's not a unique event. You go somewhere like Yana Rally or somewhere that's similar conditions, but it's about anticipating and just understanding the change of conditions and being ready for it, and then being able to gamble as well. You know, that's a huge part about Monte Carlo Rally, isn't it?
Yeah, I think probably a lot of it does come down to confidence. Success breeds success, because it's always said that, you know, for Monte you need a little bit of luck. I think the tired old cliche is a little bit like the spinning roulette wheel in the casino in Monte Carlo. But to some extent you do make your own luck, and you have to trust. I mean, I think what all of the drivers say is you have to trust that if something doesn't feel fast, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's all over and you're going to have a disaster. Yeah. You can lose a stack of time in a snowy section and then make it up all up on dry asphalt and vice versa. So even though you're in the car and you're thinking, oh my God, this is horrible, I guess what makes you good at Monte is to have the mental strength to say that doesn't matter. We're just going to press on and it'll be okay in the end. Whereas some drivers probably get a little bit spooked or a little bit frustrated at the time they're losing, and then it leads to a mistake.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you come out of a particularly icy section when you're on slicks, you come back onto the dry and you push that bit harder because you think, I've got to make that time up. Everybody's lost that time. I spoke to Petter Solberg earlier in the week and asked him, you know, what words for Oliver. And he said, you know, Oliver needs to understand he will be on the wrong tyre at some point this weekend, probably more than one. And he needs to understand that if he's on a slick on snow, the 30 seconds he loses in that stage, he'll make them up when he's in the dry on the next one. It's almost a peace of mind, or a state of mind, sorry, that you need to get into for this event. And you look at the likes of Ogier, Loeb, Mäkinen, they all had that ability to relax.
Yep, absolutely true.
And yeah, so I mean, let's see.
Do you remember, like, Sebastian Loeb, when was it? Is it 2006 that he goes off on, a Friday? And he comes back and he finishes second.
Unbelievable.
And I think that just illustrates more than anything else how if you have that right mindset, as you say, all is not lost in Monty. And I guess that's the motto, you know, you have to bear in mind that all is not lost, even though it feels like it is.
No, exactly.
But that probably comes with maturity and experience. And it's interesting you mentioned Oliver. I mean, it's a tough time in your first Monty, and particularly a tough time being as young as Oliver is. So it'll take a lot for him to tap into that mindset, because I think, you know, it's not an instinctive one. It's not intuitive as an event at all.
It's not. I mean, it's, you know, for any rally driver, it's not. But particularly a young fella who wants to get out there and show the world just how quick he is. And, you know, Petter was saying, you know, he needs to take this one really steady. First Monty. Don't try and win the rally. You know, don't try and be a hero. So I did cast his mind back to when he did the Monty for the first time in 2001. First time ever, he ran second and then rolled.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And don't forget, you know, Monty is, I think, is still the last event where we saw what was back then a Group N car setting a fastest overall stage time. Herman Gassner was in that.
Yeah, no, exactly.
So anything can happen, you know.
And it can, you know. One of the best and most intriguing Montys was whatever year it was when we weren't in WRC and we saw, I think it was Brian Bouffier win.
Yeah.
But Delacour took all of that time, didn't he, when he made that incredible tyre choice. He gambled on it snowing, and it snowed like mad when we were up in Valence. And it can happen on this event. And I have to say, this podcast was interrupted initially. I'm not normally a name dropper, but I will drop this name. The podcast was interrupted by Mr. Ari Vatanen, who called, or returned my call, thank you very much, Ari, to talk about various things. And of course, 1985, probably the greatest comeback that we ever saw in any round of the WRC, when I think he made more than, was it 15 minutes or something?
That's incredible. Yeah, I mean, that makes the 5 minutes or so that Sebastian Loeb made up that we were talking about earlier seem like an amateur effort.
Yeah.
It was incredible, really. But probably, I don't know if it's true or not, but much longer event. And probably Monty's, is that the only rally you could really do that on because of the gaps?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we had a proper safari coming this year, you could obviously do it on safari. But for sure, you know, in terms of the conditions changing, it's only this place. We will, I'm sure, at times we'll see drivers winning and losing minutes on stages, and it won't mean that they've won or lost the event. It is pretty unique. So just give us your tip. Who is going to win this one? We have got seven drivers driving new cars or driving World Rally cars for the first time here. It's a real step into the unknown for the likes of Tanak and Ogier and all of these people. But having said that, we'll get to your answer in a minute. I'm blethering again. But all of those boys, you look at Lappi, you know, Ogier.
Yeah.
They've all started new cars three times in the last 3 years or three times in the last 4 years on this event. So, you know, running a new car for the first time is nothing new.
Yeah.
For them. But tell me, who do you think?
It's a real tough one. I mean, like, the unoriginal choice would be Sebastien Ogier, simply because, you know, he's the master of these conditions. And we've seen him when he was on his debut with Ford and with Citroën. He still won it anyway, despite the fact he was getting to grips with the car and the team at the time. So,
and now he's in arguably the quickest car.
Yeah. So, logically, you'd say Ogier, because, you know, you're absolutely right that all these people have got to learn their new environments, but we've seen twice that that's not stopped Sebastian. And he didn't quite win on his Volkswagen debut here, because I think Sebastian Loeb beat him to it, didn't he?
Yes,
but
exactly.
He was looking at the championship back then, and he said afterwards, although he would say that, he said, well, he could have won if he'd been really, really going for it. But at the time, Sebastian Loeb was only doing a park campaign, so he wasn't that bothered about chasing him. So you could say that Sebastian Ogier has won literally every single time he's stepped into a new car, he's won in Monty.
Yeah.
So that makes him pretty hard to overlook. But, you know, it's so interesting. It's so interesting. I mean, like, any of the Hyundai drivers could win. Any of the three.
Yeah.
Of the Toyota boys, well, you'd have to say that, you know, the odds are weighted heavily in Ogier's favour, so, you know, it's probably likely that of the three of them, he's the only one with a real chance of winning. But, You never know.
We've seen Alvin. Alvin's set some scratch times here in the past.
He has.
17 on the Saturday was particularly good, and been reasonably unfortunate in the last couple of years. And for me, you know, this could be an event that could really suit, and it does suit Alvin. You know, Germany in, and Corsica, of course.
Oh, that really wet Corsica as well. When he's, I forget which year it was, when it was like everyone was saying that. Do you remember which year it was? It
16,
was
16, I think. Wasn't it? 15 or 16.
And Corsica was treacherously wet. Rivers
and
of water everywhere.
Said it was like
exactly.
Monty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's.
And he was leading.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. Maybe I'm wrong to discount Alvin so harshly. I'm sorry, Alvin.
But I think what will be probably difficult for Alvin is getting to grips with a new car.
Yeah.
Because he's never done it before.
Well, he's never driven anything but a Fiesta.
A Fiesta.
In
no,
some shape or form, has he?
So. Exactly. So, you know, this is the thing that Ogier has so much experience here, and so much experience that he can transfer from one car to the next. For me, the really, really interesting one is going to be Tanak, and what can he do? Because I spoke to Latvala about this, Jari Matti, earlier in the week again, and I asked him, and he said, you know, again, exactly the same as you, you would look to Ogier as a natural choice for a winner here, he said, but you can't discount just the pace that Tanak's got and the self-belief that he brings to the new car. It's going to be a fascinating one, but either way, it's going to be great. And then obviously M Sport as well. You know, we've seen in the past Sunnen and Lappi. These boys have both gone well here, both set good times. Lappi was he fourth, running fourth until Power Stage last year.
That would be amazing, you know, sort of like, you know, much as we've got a huge deal of affection for Ott and Ogier and the Toyota and the Hyundai drivers, wouldn't it be fantastic to see M Sport win here? Really, really would. I mean, I think nobody apart from Toyota and Hyundai, so that's quite a lot of people, would actually begrudge them that.
No, I mean, you couldn't. You know, the M Sport, Malcolm and Rich Milner, they put so much into everything, into the championship. They provide so much of the championship as well, you know, in terms of cars and what have you. And we've seen, you know, absolutely at the back end of last year, as we've already mentioned, Corsica last year, there's still plenty of pace in that Fiesta. They've got an upgrade coming for Argentina. So I think, you know, if it's not here, I do think we'll see some wins for that.
If you look at the last three Montes, M Sports won twice, so that's a pretty good record.
Yeah, no, exactly. And, you know, ultimately, as everybody keeps saying on this event, and we are now driving into Gap, and there is, I can't remember as much snow on the mountains around Gap as this in recent years. We've come here in the last few years, there's been nothing.
Yeah, it's been like a desert. I mean, there's a lot of snow. And funny enough, I was talking to some people who drove here from Italy, and they went that road, I forget, is it the Mont Blanc over Brionson? Anyway, they said there was a lot of snow at the top of the mountains.
Really?
So I think that bodes really, really well for a proper snowy Monty.
It does. But as I was saying, the thing that everybody talks about is the fact that you don't need the fastest car here. What you need is confidence and a comfortable car that gives you confidence. So, you know, if somebody can very quickly bed in on Friday morning and you know, pick a couple of right tyre choices and just get everything right, that will feed into their self-belief. And it's so much of a good result here is born out of that. So, who knows? It's going to be an absolutely fascinating event. We've already been going on for 18 minutes, which is quite a lot. So, actually, it's
time
probably...
Time flies when you're having fun.
And when you're talking about noddy, nearly crashing cars... Let's take a break. So we'll be back with you in a moment. Welcome back to part two of Gravel Notes. Now, we've kind of done Monty, but I would like to ask you, Anthony, about the rest of the year. What are you excited about? It's obviously you're very excited about Pirelli coming back next year, but what's really got your feverometer going for 2020?
Well, aside from the new drivers and new cars, which is always exciting, and I was listening to your podcast the other day when you said it was really exciting seeing them in new shirts, and I get that. I get new shirts are exciting. If I had to choose one thing, sad, I know. If I had to choose one thing which I've got a lot of fever for, I think it would actually be New Zealand, because it was one of my favourite events, and to see it back is fantastic. You know, so many great memories of the place and the people and the rallies, and you know, I remember Colin McRae always said it was his favourite, if not one of his favourite rally. You know, and all of the greats say that they love New Zealand, and you can absolutely see why. So, to see New Zealand back and see those rows back, and to get to experience that again, that's probably what I'm I'm looking forward to most.
It takes you a day to get there. And, you know, for us to keep going back, because we've probably done countless New Zealands between us, it's got to be worthwhile. And those roads, you know, remember that mountain road on the road up north, the Whangarei?
Yeah, yeah.
The old hire car got it through there.
Well, this is the thing, you see, sort of like, whilst obviously, you know, drive safe at home, kids, you don't even have to be competing on the rally to have good fun in the car, though.
No, exactly. And equally, you know, you don't need to be going quickly, because those roads are so special. And when you can see there's nothing coming for a long way, you can have a lot of fun with the camber. And yeah, it's an amazing place.
And of course, so many of those roads, I mean, we're talking about normal public roads, are gravel, which is not something you really get in the rest of Europe, is
no,
it?
Exactly. You have to go into Finland normally. But associated with Finland, I'll just ask you, what are you having for supper tonight? Is it some chucken? Is it some fosh?
Could it be fosh, or might it be pasta?
Fosh,
I might have the chops.
Always, Hayden Padden would be the first to acknowledge this as a huge amount of fun to be had with the fabulous Kiwi accent. So New Zealand is huge. Obviously, we've also got safari coming back. We're going back to Japan. Not exactly the same place in Japan. We're not going back to Hokkaido. We're going to the Aichi Prefecture, which is close to Nagoya, I think.
I believe so. Yeah, yeah. Close to Toyota's HQ, because they're based in Nagoya, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we're going to have a great year, and we've got lots to talk about this year. But as we are nearly at the place where we park every year on this rally, I want to ask you something that probably... go round and then take the next right.
That's
sorry
one.
About that, listeners. I want to ask you, you're one of the few people who comes to the Monte Carlo Rally every year and the Monaco Grand Prix. Now, give us your insight, Piccolo. What is it like in Monaco during Grand Prix weekend compared to this weekend? For obviously, we have the launch for the season on Thursday in Casino Square, but then the rally comes back up here to Gap and goes back on the Sunday. But what's it like?
In the Grand Prix, it's a bit different, because the Grand Prix literally takes over the entire principality. And by takes over, it means you can't drive on the roads until the evenings. There's barriers everywhere. So, you know, you're absolutely left in no doubt that the Grand Prix is happening. In recent years, I mean, last year was a bit disappointing, because we got to Monaco, do you remember? And there really was very little sign that the rally was actually there. But I think it's going to be different this year, because we've got the start in Monaco again, and we've got the finish in Monaco. So I think the organisers have probably, I don't know, listened to a bit of feedback that said, you know, let's have a little bit more Monte Carlo in the Monte Carlo rally.
Yeah.
And that seems to be happening. So... It's a very different atmosphere. I remember some of the early Montes we did, you did get that feeling that the rally was taking over the principality. In fact, there was that super special stage that did part of the Grand Prix circuit.
Yes.
So you know, I'd like us to be going back to that. And hopefully, I think we will.
It's fair. I mean, that's a very fair point, because, you know, there's been years that we've been there when the Monte Carlo circus, or the circus has come to Monte Carlo, and actually has had more publicity than the rally. It's a tricky one, but I am sure it's going to be an absolutely fabulous event, and I will look forward to talking to you about it next week, because right now we have arrived in our parking space, so it's time for goodbye from me and goodbye from Anthony.
Goodbye, it's been a great pleasure, thank you.